Each month I run a webinar for my mentoring clients. And this week I thought it would be possibly interesting for you to listen in and hear what we kind of discuss. We talk about HMOs, we talk about property, but with some of the changes going on in the mortgage markets, the money markets, and Bank of England interest rates, I thought it might be useful for you to listen to the recording of that webinar, which normally has slides, so it's a visual event, but obviously you're going to be listening to it on a podcast. I think you'll still get the gist of what we're discussing, and at the end you'll hear some of the mentees ask questions about their own projects or their own situations. I think you'll find it interesting, and maybe it just gives you an insight into some of the things that we talk about in my mentoring program. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it, and I hope it educates you as well. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Few headlines I'm sure you are more than familiar with, but in case you're not, there's this potential bank crisis happening, which we'll talk a little bit about. Inflation figures released this morning. The Office for National Statistics released inflation up to February, and it's gone in the wrong direction. They thought it was going to be under 10%. Last month it was 10.1%, but in fact it's risen to 10.4%. Now the government is saying that's down to two things. One is energy and the other one is food prices. Food prices are up by 18% over the year. So quite serious increase in prices, in retail prices. Will this have an impact on the housing market? Possibly. What we've seen up till now is house prices flattening. Interest rates have been set at 4%, but tomorrow is the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee. And given what's happened literally an hour ago with the Fed, that could be on the edge as well. We're seeing some mortgage rates coming down. There's still high demand for rental property and rents are still going up. So let's delve a little bit more deeply into some of these areas. So at 6 p.m. tonight, yes, just over an hour ago, the Fed, the USA Central Bank, announced that it was going to go ahead with a quarter point rate rise. So this is quite a big announcement, because this takes the US interest rate to, I think, 4.75%. And indicates that the central bank are wanting to what's called tighten the monetary system. They want to rein in some of the money that they have actually been printing, particularly during COVID and slightly past COVID. And by raising interest rates, they're giving a signal to the market that they want to dampen down kind of the flood of money in the markets. But of course, that it doesn't happen on its own. So when the government raises interest rates, well, it's not the government actually, it's the Federal Reserve, the bank, when it raises interest rates, it obviously has a knock-on effect on many other things. So anybody that has, if you like, variable rate loans, they will often be pegged to the Fed base rate. So they'll be going up again. Mortgages, variable rate mortgages, they'll be going up again. Any other variable rate loans that businesses might have out, they will be going up. So it does serve as a dampening effect on the economy. It stops businesses from investing and it stops people from spending a lot of money because they're worried about how much they'll be spending on interest rates. I mean, having said that, historically, of course, it's still at a very, very low place. But given that we've been so used to 0% or near 0% interest rates, we've suddenly 475 times higher than we were when we had 0%. So it's quite a shock to the system. Now, as well as interest rates going up by the Federal Reserve, and we're waiting to see what happens tomorrow with the Bank of England, when they decide to raise rates, in line with the Fed. I'm sure you've also become aware of what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. So this was a couple of weeks ago when SVB Bank basically went under. Now, the thing about SVB Bank was it was a bank based in California. They funded a lot of Silicon Valley enterprises and Silicon Valley businesses. But this, by many commentators, is seen to be, if you like, the beginning of a new banking crisis. And some people have called this the beginning of the next banking crisis, like 2008. But this is slightly different. And the reason why this is slightly different is that partly to do with the role of the government, which I'll come to. So in case you hadn't heard the news, I'm sure you have heard the news, but what actually happened at Silicon Valley Bank? Well, it was about the 6th of March when Silicon Valley Bank declared it needed further investment, and it was going to one of its key shareholders to ask for more investment. And that stakeholder, that shareholder said, no, we can't give you any more investment. And the reason why the bank needed more investment was because the US Fed had raised interest rates. And what that meant was that depositors, so, you know, if you're a depositor and you had £10,000 or £20,000 or whatever in the bank, you started to think, hang on a minute, if I don't get more interest because the base rate has gone up, so I should be getting more interest on my money. If I don't get more interest, I'm going to move my money elsewhere. I'm going to put it into another bank that has raised interest rates. Now, the reason why SVB was struggling to pay those interest rates was because they had some long-term securities, which effectively they had used the depositors' money to buy long-term securities, but they were only getting, let's say, 1.25% on those securities because they bought those securities 2 or 3 years ago when the interest rate was at 1.25%. So they're getting 1.25% for the money, but the depositors are saying, well, hang on, we want 4% because that's what the base rate is. So there's this massive difference of, let's say, 3% between what the bank is getting from the securities that they've used the money to buy and what their depositors, their customers are asking for. So there's this huge gap. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you imagine, let's say 3% of £10 billion, suddenly you're looking at a large sum of money, or probably £100 billion. Now, the other kind of coincidental thing, well, it wasn't really coincidental, but the other thing that happened was a guy called Peter Thiel, who founded PayPal, amongst other businesses. Also, he has an investment firm. And he realized that things were a bit amiss at SVB. He realized that they had this problem, that what they were receiving in terms of their return and what they were going to have to give out, there was a big gap between what their income was and really what their outgoings were. They were effectively bankrupt. And he saw this coming. So he directed his investment company to sell shares in SVB. And for investors to start investing elsewhere, because he could see what was happening. Now, of course, this sent ripples through the market, because you've now got depositors removing their money from the bank. You've got the bank unable to make the payments on a higher interest rate. You've then got shareholders selling their shares. So the value of the shares is going down as well. And all of those different aspects, if you like, fed together and caused the downfall of Silicon Valley Bank. Now, the reason why this has been, although it may have not been much in the news, it's actually extremely important, because some people are seeing this as the bubble, the first bubble that has been popped, the first balloon, if you like, that has been popped. Because SVB, like many, many other second or third tier banks, it's not one of the major national American banks, but it's one that's still big. But it has benefited from being able to borrow money at very low interest rates. And it has also lent money at very low interest rates. But now that interest rates are going up, it found itself in this position of having to pay out more than it actually had coming in. And therefore, of course, you do that too much and you go bankrupt. So what the government, the American government said, and Joe Biden made this announcement, he said, don't worry, everybody, it's going to be okay, because we are going to ensure every depositor's money, every bit of money that was in the bank from a depositor, we're going to insure it and you will get it back. Now, you know, in the UK, we have a bank insurance. So if you have a bank account, your money is insured up to £85,000. In America, I think it's $250,000 that is insured. So that was put in place after the bank crisis of 2008. But what the American government have said is we're going to insure your deposit to an endless amount. So even if you've got £25 million deposited in this bank, sorry, $25 million deposited in this bank, we will make sure you get your money back. You can imagine. I think it's to the tune of $10 billion. I think I'm right in saying it's $10 billion. So a lot of people, again, gone scratched their heads and said, "Well, that's an awful lot of money. You're saying you're going to insure all the money that everybody has deposited into SVB that they have lost because the bank has gone bust." And the American government gone, yeah, you know, we want to help everybody. We want to be kind of good and kind to everybody, without, of course, recognizing that that money is just doesn't come from thin air. They have to print it. And when you print it, of course, that's inflationary. And then we had a couple of other banks also going under. You probably heard about Credit Suisse. And there was another American bank as well where it happened to, and there was another Swiss bank as well. So what we've started to see potentially is a domino effect, where one bank the bubble pops, another bank the bubble pops, another bank the bubble pops. Now at the moment this is being contained. How? Because governments are stepping in. And even in the UK arm of the SVB bank, Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt did a deal with HSBC whereby they allowed HSBC to buy the SVB UK bank for £1. Now, this broke the rules that were set in place in 2008. They went round the rules. And what they did by doing that was they sort of secured the UK arm of the SVB bank. But of course, that debt has now been taken on by HSBC and will be underwritten, of course, by the government. Now, you can imagine that if this carries on, if we keep seeing this happen, which is very likely, given that the Fed has just raised interest rates, the gap gets even bigger between those banks which have bought government securities, whether it's bonds or gilts or whatever it is. They buy those securities to give them long-term investment. They take the depositors' money. They do various different things with it. But one of the things they do is they buy these long-term securities, let's say five-year securities. When they bought those securities, nobody really thought that inflation was going to be a problem and that the government would raise interest rates to the extent that it has. So they were confident they could pay their investors at, say, 1%, and those investors would be happy. And I mean, over the last 10 years, how many of us have had money in the bank and looked at it and thought, it's pathetic. You know, I might have £10,000 in the bank, but I'm making like £100 interest a year because it's so low. But the other thing is, we haven't really had massive inflation. So while we could argue that we're not getting much on our money and it's still better to put it into property, for example, actually, the point is also that we're not losing so much money from inflation, because inflation has been very, very low. But this domino effect could start. And I believe that tomorrow, if the Bank of England do raise interest rates, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we start to see this in some smaller banks. So keep an eye out on the news. Now, practically, how can you kind of help yourselves? Well, first of all, if you do have more than £85,000 in a bank account, try and reduce that down to £85,000 or less. Move your money around, you know, move it to a somewhere where you've only got a few thousand pounds, so that you don't have to, you know, you don't have to worry about that insurance situation if the bank does go under. Another thing would be, I mean, I know that for probably many of us, if we had that amount of money sitting in the bank account, we'd probably be looking to invest it in property anyway. But sometimes you might find that you've got a large sum of money sitting in the bank waiting to go into a project. So just be mindful that the UK bank insurance is 85,000. That's the limit. It might be, of course, that if this did happen in the UK, our government would respond to the same way as the Fed, which is to say, don't worry, we'll underwrite everything. But we just don't know. The other thing is, of course, that if you are deposited in a bank, let's say, I mean, I've got an account with Metro Bank, I've got an account with Starling Bank. These are all small, kind of almost community type banks. They're not the big Lloyds, the Bank of Barclays, Lloyds, Barclays, probably NatWest. These are some of the bigger high street banks that would be very much underpinned by the government. But some of those smaller banks, they could potentially fall if the domino effect starts. So it's just worth keeping your eyes open on what's happening. And I think that as we go forward, depending on what happens tomorrow in the UK market, I think we're going to start to see it harder to get lending. But I actually think that long-term interest rates are going to start coming down. And I've got a slide that demonstrates that in a little while. So one of the things that I thought was quite interesting this month was to look at some other people's statistics and kind of interest about mortgage markets. Right, sorry, I'm just going to pause there. Natalia, you've asked a very interesting question. Will the deposit insurance cover savings and corporate bank accounts? So you need to look at your terms and conditions, Natalia. If you have a client money account, the bank cannot foreclose on that account. So it might be that for example, we have actually pulled some money from one of our personal accounts into our client money account and put it there because we know that acts almost as an insured deposit account. We've also evened out some of our accounts as well. We had a little bit too money in one of our accounts and we had to move it to another one so that we could benefit from the £85,000 limit. Because I think that it's a really good question. I don't think that traditional corporate bank or business bank accounts are covered by that £85,000 insurance limit. So great question. Thank you. So just look after your money. Move it around if you need to. If you've got investors you're working with or you've got clients or customers or people you're talking to, it just might be worth mentioning that it's worth them keeping in their personal bank accounts, keeping it under £85,000. So this is a slide that talks about what's happening in terms of lending and where we're up to and what the predictions are in terms of lending in the mortgage market. And as you can see, this came out in December, so it's a few months behind already. And this is one of the problems, of course, with statistics. You get them a few months lagging. So everything can change in those few months. But what we can see is that throughout 2021, and to a certain degree, 2022, there were quite high transactions on the property market. And of course, I think we all knew that just by dint of experience. We've all been chasing deals, haven't we? And there's been lots and lots of people going after one property and we've seen how much it's happening. But this organization called UK Finance are predicting that those transactions are going to start to reduce down because of the impact of higher interest rates. And they think that mortgage lending is going to start coming down as well in terms of gross lending. So in 2022, they are saying that they think that it's going to go down by 23% new house purchases, and remortgages are going to be actually up a little bit. They're going to be 8% up, which is interesting given the current situation for mortgages. But of course, I don't know if you've looked at 5-year and 2-year or 5-year and 1-year. You might have seen what we've been seeing, which is actually a 5-year fixed rate is generally at a lower rate than a 2-year deal, because the 5-year is more certain, and because the money markets believe that long term to have certainty over 5 years, albeit in a lower interest rate product, is better for them than the uncertainty, the volatility that a two-year product will bring. Now, this is also quite interesting about lending to landlords. So as you can see, in 2023, they are predicting that purchases by landlords are going to go down by 27%, and remortgages are going to go down by 22%. Now, if you look at that top line, you'll see that, and this is, by the way, this is value of mortgage lending. So this isn't necessarily how many properties are being bought. This is the actual amount of money that's being lent to purchase or remortgage property. And you can see, obviously, in 2020, it kind of goes up and down. It goes up and down. There was quite a good year for remortgages in 2019 because, of course, we had got to a very low level in interest rates. So I think a lot of landlords thought, right, I'll fix my interest rate for 2 or 3 years at this point. Then they came down the following year because, of course, it was COVID. But interestingly, you can see between 2020 and about 2022, quite a lot of landlords then bought more properties. They obviously saw what was coming. The other interesting thing about this kind of these tables is that in terms of arrears, you can see how in 2012, these are the number of first charge mortgages in arrears. So, and these represented over 2.5% of balance outstanding at the end of the period. 150,000 first charge mortgages were in arrears in 2012, coming right down to 2019, where they're at the lowest level. And they've stayed pretty low since then. But there is a feeling that arrears could grow. So there could be a position whereby, you know, landlords are not paying their mortgages, or they're certainly falling into arrears in those mortgages. And of course, this then flows into the second chart down below, which is about possessions. So number of possessions on first charge mortgage properties in the period. 2020 and 2021, none of them really happened. Very, very few happened. Why? Well, of course, because of COVID, they weren't allowed to repossess. There were lots of rules about repossessions. The banks were told to give people mortgage holidays. So all of that stopped repossessions happening. But you can see again that over the next couple of years, the prediction is that in 2023, there'll be 7,300 possessions, which still is very, very low, actually, but 78% more than 2022. So again, just interesting to see that there might be some opportunities here. If the, you know, as the interest rates go up, if let's say landlords haven't raised their rents, or they're a bit slow to raise rents, and they suddenly find they've got a new boiler to put in, or they've got to do a new roof, or something happens, they haven't got any spare change, they haven't got any spare cash, then suddenly not making any money on their property. They stop paying their mortgage. The mortgage goes into arrears. Eventually that house will become repossessed. Well, that gives an opportunity for the people like us who've got our antennae up and looking at our local areas and leafleting and getting out there and networking and sharing what we're doing and really working our patch. And I think when you do that, you might find that you come across people who are in trouble. And of course, this is where leaflets are very powerful, because you might leaflet an area 4 or 5 times. I remember we did leafleting in an area of Crewe 7 times. And then suddenly we got 3 bites at the cherry. 3 really good deals came on the table in a matter of about 3 weeks. So I don't know what happened, but suddenly it kind of hit the mark. So sometimes it's about persistence. You know, you've got to get out there and keep doing this, because you might find that suddenly something happens or something moves in the market, and you want to be the person that people come to when they're getting into trouble and they're prepared to do a deal. Before that, they might not be a very motivated buyer, but after the event happens, suddenly they feel they're motivated and they want to get out there and do a deal and not be repossessed, because that will go against them in terms of their credit score, and they know the impact that will have on being able to invest. So let's have a quick look at residential mortgage rates. So while residential mortgage rates have started to fall back below 4% for some cases, depending on your loan to value and depending on the property you're wishing to buy, buy-to-let rates are still at a slightly higher level. So in February, the average fixed rate deal was 5.9%, according to data analyst MoneyFacts. But as you can see from this chart, they are coming down. And I think it's really interesting, again, that lenders are beginning to realise that if their rates are too high, they can't sell enough of them. And they need to sell mortgages. You know, one of the bread and butter of what a bank does these days is not give money to depositors, it's to give money, or it's rather to lend money to borrowers. That's how they make their money. So this is really a key part of what's going on in the mortgage market. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if we move that on to February, where that dot would be and to what extent that line would be coming down. Because I think it's very likely that given what's happening, although we're seeing base rates possibly go up, I think actually in bond markets and in money markets, rates are coming down because people are realizing that there's tightening going on and they need to make their mortgages as appealing as possible to landlords and to investors. So some facts about whether landlords are selling or buying. I'm not going to read all of this out, but I'll just give you the headlines. So last year, landlords sold 35,000 more properties than they bought in 2022. And this meant that the rental sector lost an average of 66 properties a day. And that's according to analysis by Hamptons, the estate agent. So imagine that 66 properties a day were lost every year to the rental market. Is it any wonder that we're seeing rents go up? It's not, is it? What else would you expect with the reduction in the number of properties on the market? Landbay did some other research that said that 7 out of 10 buy-to-let landlords do not intend to sell any of their properties in 2023, but 3 out of 10 are. So we're seeing a slow decline in the buy-to-let market. We're seeing a slow decline in the residential property investment market. And this should be a big concern to the government, because if there are not enough properties available to rent, we see rents go up. We also see more homelessness. We also see more movement of people. We also see more family breakdown. We also see more destabilizing in society. So housing is an absolute key part of our economy. It's vital that housing, and I believe the private rental sector really plays a massive part in this, which, sad to say, the government has ignored. And they have put so many barriers in place for people investing that many of us, perhaps 20 years ago, might have invested in simple buy-to-let properties. But now we're trying to leverage our investment, and we can see the opportunity in HMO. The demand for HMO rooms is absolutely staggering. We cannot fill our rooms quickly enough. And why is that? Because many landlords have decided, what with all the legislation, all the regulation, all the costs, energy prices going up, it just isn't worth it anymore. And they're selling up. Now, the research I've seen doesn't differentiate between HMOs and single buy-to-lets. But let's imagine it's a mixture of all of them. What impact is that going to have on the market? Now, what that, of course, means for you is it's a great opportunity. And I know I keep coming back to this same thread, but I really do think that while things are difficult and tough, this does give us an opportunity to get out there and find those deals, find those motivated sellers, and also understand what's happening in the market long term, so that we don't have to be scared about investing because we can see what's coming over the horizon. One of the things I always say to people is, if you're worried about investing in property, all you have to do is look at the market. How many people want to rent property? And if there are more people wanting to rent than there are properties available, you've got a strong opportunity to create a product that can meet the demand. And as you know, quite often I'll look at spare room. I jump on spare room and have a quick look, because on spare room, it's probably the best tool that we have as HMO landlords to be able to identify the market It's not perfect, you know, it's not fail-safe, but it gives you an idea of how many tenants are looking in a particular area versus how many rooms are available. That itself should show you the difference between those two, those provisions, if you like, of demand and supply. And that is enough to give me confidence that the demand for HMO rooms is not going anywhere. Of course, it's buoyed on by some of the other factors that are happening, such as immigration, where many immigration hotels are springing up. The government are having to use hotels to house people who are coming to the UK, whether legally or illegally, but they need short-term accommodation. And we're just also seeing more and more people wanting to live in shared property, possibly because of the increases in energy costs and so on. So this is having a knock-on effect on buy-to-lets and also HMOs. Interestingly, Landbay also showed that of those landlords intending to sell up, half of them said it was down to interest rates, and one in five said that the rent they receive doesn't cover their mortgage costs, which would correlate with what we saw earlier with some of those repossession figures growing and that possibility that some landlords are going to get into arrears in the next couple of years. Okay, moving on, house prices. So I think we can all take some comfort from the fact that despite interest rates possibly going up or certainly being a bit uncertain, the market is strong and also house prices are growing and they continue to grow. And if you look at this chart, it obviously shows that the blue line is the UK, red is England. That's the top line. So from January 2021, a house that might have been, let's say, £262,000, that would be a kind of average property price, has gone right up to just below £320,000, maybe £318,000 to November 2022. So in just, I don't know, 23 months, maybe 22 months, we've seen, if you owned a house in January 2021 that was worth £262,000, you have made £32,000, £35,000 increase. That is like earning another salary. That's like having your, you know, an average salary for the UK given to you in a capital value over that time. Who wouldn't want to invest in property when that's going on? Of course, what the downside is to that is great if you've already got property. It's not so great if you're looking for property. So one of the things, of course, that, you know, we try and do is to find those properties which, although the base value may have gone up, actually, because they have been unloved, they've been uncared for, they haven't been maintained, there's an opportunity there to do a deal with the owner. There's a possibility of adding value through doing a good refurb, turning it into an HMO. The house gives you the ability to negotiate that price. But we realise that we are, of course, working in a high inflation environment, and today's announcement would correlate with that. And it's likely that just as we've seen in interest rates go, inflation go up, house prices are likely to follow there as well. Now, this is quite an interesting chart. So where did I get this chart from? I can't remember, actually. But however, I think this might have been from Money Facts. This chart really shows how many homes are being sold across the UK and data about those properties. So what we're seeing is that the number of purchases each month is now much closer to pre-pandemic levels. So you can see here, December 2022, the red line is England, the blue line is UK. So let's take UK as a whole. Just over 100,000 property transactions were happening every month in December, which is similar to about, if we go back to, say, September 2020. Or you can see there was a massive dip in April 2020. We all know why. But following the end of lockdown and then the stamp duty freeze, there was a huge spike in transactions. And that was a real boom in 2021 when people tried to take advantage of the cut in stamp duty. Of course, one of the other issues was that people were still on low interest rates. And of course, by this summer, we'll be seeing some of those two-year fixed rate, low interest rate deals coming to an end. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to those bigger properties that people have maybe moved up into because they didn't have to pay the stamp duty. Will they have to start to downsize? I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one to see. But you could see that being a bit of a pinch point in the residential mortgage market when big properties that were bought with, you could have saved £60,000, £70,000 or more on stamp duty. You could see that suddenly the buyers are beginning to realise our salaries haven't gone up. The value of the property might have gone up a little bit. But nevertheless, we're now having to refinance onto a much more expensive mortgage deal and we can't afford it. Now, let's just have a quick look at spare room. So spare room rental levels, this is their average rents by region, their quarterly analysis. And you can see here, oh, I thought I had circled it. Maybe a later one I've circled. So on the left in the first column, we've got average monthly room rent quarter four 2022. So let's take my area, which is the Northwest. You can see there it's £523. The average monthly room rent the year before quarter four 2021 was £453. So the annual change is 15%. The average change across the UK is 13%. London, the change in London is 22%. So if you were renting a room in December 2021, you would have paid an average in London of £768. By last December, that had gone up to £935. Yikes. The only one that had gone down was Scotland, and that's, of course, because they introduced rent controls. But all the others have gone up significantly. The Northeast, 16%. Wales, 18%. So, and remember, these are advertised room rates. We don't know whether there were deals done. We don't even know whether some of these were lagging rooms that were just advertised on Spare Room. And, you know, because some landlords never take their adverts off Spare Room. They're sort of constantly on there. So we don't know how much this was to do with new stock that was coming on. We don't know if there was competition for those rooms. And in the end, the landlord might have said, make me an offer. Anything over £601, I'll accept. So this is very much a kind of finger in the air, but it definitely shows in 1 year how rents have gone up by a significant amount. Homelet does a rental index data every month. And they said that the average rent in the UK has dropped by 0.2% since December. So this was from December 2022 to January 2023. So overall, those lettings that happened. I wouldn't be surprised if that's partly because of the weather. People tend to want to rent properties less in January because, you know, they've Christmas has happened, they haven't got any money, these things, you know, the market just kind of slows down a little bit. But every region in the UK continues to see annual growth. So that 1 month is really a little bit of a kind of anomaly. And I suspect that over 12 months, you would see it would continue to grow quite significantly. So you can see that London has seen a dip in rents, but again, that was only over 1 month. And in the Northeast and the East Midlands, there's been a slight increase. Now that's month on month, 0.8% month on month. So if you were to times that by 12, you're getting to nearly 11, 12%, aren't you, over the year. So a lot of data there to kind of, you know, take on board. And this chart is from the Homelet Rental Index. So it shows here a variation. And this, of course, takes into account houses much more so than rooms. So for us in the HMO market, the spare room rental index is more indicative of where things are moving. But it's still interesting to see that just in general rental, the general rental market, we're seeing an increase of 10.2% across the whole marketplace. Right. OK, moving on from the market, capital gains tax. Who knows what's happening in April with capital gains tax? the government are reducing it. Well, they're reducing the allowance. So, you know, when you buy a property and you add value to it, you maybe might hold it for a few years and then you decide, oh, I want to sell it and get some money out. You have an allowance that you can use against that increase. So the capital gains increase, the capital gain, if you like, you can deduct your allowance before you then pay tax on it. And in 2022 to 2023, the current allowance is £12,300. So you as an individual could gain £12,300 on property or stocks and shares or other assets, and you could take that allowance off the amount that you gain before you had to calculate your tax. And if you owned it with your partner, you both got that allowance, so it would be a total of £24,600 without paying tax. Now, you can't carry over any unused allowance. So if you don't use it this year, then it goes back to zero from the 1st of April 2023, and then it starts up again. But the government decided to cut the capital gains tax allowance from £12,300 to £6,000 in the next financial year, and then to £3,000 from April 2024. Now, this is obviously extremely bad for people who thought about selling a property, because unless they sold it before April 2023 and benefited from the full capital gains tax allowance, their capital gains tax allowance is significantly dropping. When you then pay tax on that capital gain, as a higher rate taxpayer, it's actually slightly more preferential than if you were paying income tax. So you pay income tax at 40% if you're a higher rate taxpayer, but 28% tax if you're additional rate or higher rate taxpayer. But nevertheless, with shares, you get a better rate. It's 20% on shares. Properties is higher than shares, but it isn't the same as income tax. And the government are also talking about evening out the tax rates so that, let's say, and they haven't announced this, but it is mooted that one of these years, the government might as well as well as reducing capital gains tax allowance, they might also mean that if you're a higher rate taxpayer, your capital gains tax will be taxed at the same rate as your income tax. So there are moves afoot, if you like, to restrict selling assets, but also the government are obviously trying to enable themselves to get more receipts in. And we've seen this, of course, with business rates, corporation tax is going up to 25% from April. It's a bit of a sliding scale, though. It's complicated. And it depends what level your business is at before you start paying it. But nevertheless, all of these extra taxes has an impact on how we run our businesses. And it's worth being aware of them.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, Natalia. Hello. Great to have you.
Yeah, my apologies, I'm without the camera because I'm driving, and I was finishing my viewing. Question regarding this capital gain tax. So does it apply, like in the capital gain tax allowance, does it apply for the buy-to-let properties or if it's like the residential property where you live, or it's similar?
So very good question, Natalia. It doesn't apply to your principal primary residence, uh-huh. What's called your PPR. Don't pay capital gains tax if you live in your property and you sell it. It's only for investment properties.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Natalia.
Sorry, Wendy, just to check, it's only investment properties in your name, not in a limited company, right?
Correct. In a limited company, you pay corporation tax.
Corporation tax, yeah. So there's no CGT on illimited.
Correct. If you buy, if you've got it in your own, these are only properties that you own in your own name. Mm-hmm. It also applies to shares, of course, as well, stocks and shares. So anything like that you sell, or any other assets that you have that might otherwise incur capital gains tax, this will affect the sale of those assets. But you're absolutely right. In a company, when you sell a property, you pay corporation tax on the gain.
Wendy, but if selling, actually, if this is, corporation tax applied, but you can deduct you know, the refurbishment and the cost that you have paid, you know, for refurbishing. So this, all of this can be removed from the capital then.
Correct. Absolutely. What you want to do is make sure that your accountant on your balance sheet tries to deduct as many of those expenses as possible, because then that reduces the actual gain. So there are lots of different things you can put against those against that gain to reduce it, so that when you come to sell it, you know you want to get it down to as low as possible. So that's absolutely right, Natalia. There's quite a lot of things you can do. You can deduct against that gain. So obviously there's a lot there to kind of take on board. There's a lot there to think about. It's the reason why I think this is important to know about those, to understand that, you know, we are working in this market. There is volatility. There is uncertainty. There is potentially a banking crisis going on in the background. And we know that in 2008, that caused a lot of issues. So what practical steps would I recommend right now? Well, I think in terms of being mortgageable, it's really important to make sure that you are, you know, you continue to get mortgages, to get approved for mortgages, push the mortgages through as quickly as you possibly can. Make sure your paperwork is correct. Make sure that you are, you know, paying your credit card off every month. Make sure that you are keeping your credit rating as high as possible. Anything that might jeopardize that, sort that out quickly. I think kind of speed and preparedness is the name of the game in this situation. Your own bank accounts, making sure that you haven't got more than £85,000 in those bank accounts, or you know, moving money around to make sure that your money is safe. If you are thinking about selling stocks and shares, or you know people who are, you've got investor friends who might be doing that, remind them about the capital gains tax allowance reducing in April. So this month is a great month to be, you know, tidying up or sorting things out. Ideally, of course, they'd be using an ISA anyway, actually, to buy and sell shares. I use an ISA wrapper because that then avoids any of the capital gains tax and income tax issues on that. And also keep an eye out on deals. Keep talking to your mortgage broker. Keep asking your mortgage broker what deals are coming out and what they're hearing on the grapevine with regard to banks. Because the worst situation would be is if you found yourself, as we did, in the 2008 financial crisis, with a fantastic mortgage offer from, what was the company called? Not the Mortgage Works, Mortgage Express. It was Mortgage Express. It was a subsidiary of Bradford and Bingley. We were doing a property, we were about to do a property up in Crewe. We just had the mortgage approved. And literally about 3 days before we were due to draw down the mortgage, the bank went under. So we lost our mortgage deal, and everything then started to collapse. Lehman Brothers had collapsed. You know, everything kind of imploded. And it took us probably about another 6 weeks before we got another mortgage deal. So, you know, when you're looking at mortgages, you might want to think about what's the strength of this bank. How strong is this bank? What opportunities does it give me? Are there risks here that I need to be made aware of? And again, your mortgage broker will be able to tell you about those. They will know on the grapevine, you know, what's going on and how the market is perceiving the debt and the lending that bank is making themselves open to. But overall, I personally feel very positive about the market. I think we've got huge demand, lots of people looking for HMOs, lots of demand for high-end HMOs and mid-range HMOs, and rents just going up and up and up. What's not to like?
Wendy, I have a question. So when we were speaking with our mortgage broker, he was saying, kind of as you're saying, that banks are a bit hesitant at the moment to lend out money unless they're sure that, well, that they're confident that you'll be able to pay them back effectively. And because of that, my question really is, he was saying that some of the banks, when they're refinancing properties, they're undervaluing them because of this risk, that they don't want to, you know, inflate the price. Even if you are a HMO, they don't want to kind of overcommit with you just in case. So is there any, like, do you know how you were saying at the beginning, like, do I really want to invest all this money in a refurb right now? because I'm putting a lot of risk in. Do you think that potentially going for deals that aren't as high, don't need as much of a refurb at this point, maybe better because of that refinance? Or is there any steps around refinancing that we should like be considering?
I think it's an excellent point, Izzy. I think ultimately it comes down to making sure that you have limited your own risk by being a safe option for the bank, being a credible option for the bank, having your own finances in a good order so that you can prove that you are a safe bet for the lending of the bank. If there is any other collateral that you can put in, sometimes that can also help from a bank point of view. Not that they would necessarily call on it, but it can be useful if you've got something else that you can add in as, as collateral or as some kind of security. I think the other thing is also just making sure that your numbers do work on slightly lower returns, or certainly not so much returns really, but a set lower values, and almost kind of having a plan B. If plan A doesn't go as you want it to, what's my plan B? And so that might be taking a little bit longer to do certain things. It might be using other kinds of development finance. I think it's having that discussion with your mortgage broker to understand what the risks are and what different options are open to you in the borrowing field, and continuing, I suppose, also to develop those relationships with investors as well. What you might find is actually that development finance becomes a little bit cheaper as mortgage finance becomes tighter and people are less likely to want mortgage finance. Development finance, suddenly they think, hey, there's an opportunity for us. We can actually reduce our rates a little bit and make this more accessible to people while they can't get mortgage finance, so they may reduce their rates a little bit while that happened. And again, we saw that in 2008 that there were certain types of finance that actually became cheaper to utilize because suddenly there was less demand because people were scared. And you know, it's that quote I put up on the group earlier from Warren Buffett, who said, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. And confidence in the market is so critical to what happens. But we as investors have to look at the facts and figures and decide, okay, what's going to be best for our portfolio? How do we feel about risk? How are we going to navigate this? And I think that part of that is sometimes about using these opportunities to find finance, to find money that perhaps ordinarily we wouldn't be that bothered to do. But in this kind of uncertain environment, we might go after finance. Think, do you know what, I think we can do this. And I, you know, you guys have all got enough business nous and enough entrepreneurial skill to turn it around and make the most of this opportunity. It's some of it is about being able to get out there and persuade other people that you have that skill.
Well, one of the observations I actually learned from our broker today was obviously because me and Isabel are first-time landlords in a lot of sense, we're very limited to the options on the table of HMO mortgages. I think we can only ever get one or two at best, and one of them is a ridiculous rate, which we'd never go with. So Kent Reliance is the only one that we can really go to for an HMO mortgage. That being said, on the buy-to-let factor, so we're kind of purchasing our properties on the buy-to-let and then we'll be remortgaging with someone like Kent Reliance, at least for the first year or two while we kind of get, you know, names under our belt, as it were. So we have to go down the route of a buy-to-let mortgage. But one of the observations that he said today was obviously with buy-to-let mortgages, in most instances, they're valued based on the rent. But in the instance of his BDM, who spoke to him today, Fleet Mortgages have just come out and said they will do us a buy-to-let mortgage, but they will consider it on a room-by-room basis. So I just found it was quite interesting, coincidentally, that we're talking about this, everything's happening in the market, and that happened literally just today.
Amazing.
So almost lenders like that have already cottoned on to this and they're kind of thinking, well, what can we offer as a product to people in this situation?
Yeah.
Because we want to kind of kickstart investment in property for people who perhaps haven't done it before. So I think it's good to see that, you know, potentially, you know, it might just be all coincidence, but potentially some lenders are looking at creating new products to kind of make that market larger within the current circumstances, which is quite interesting.
Excellent. Is there any other questions from anybody?
Yeah, guys, with regards to the mortgages right now, so because I can see that you are very advanced on that. So what is the typical, the lender, would they expect still 20% of the down payment, or they want these days more?
So generally it's about 25%, Natalia. Some will do an 80% loan to value, but you're probably looking at slightly higher rates. Certainly, if you can put more cash into the deal, you'll get a better interest rate on your loan. That's a fairly standard, you know, procedure. But different lenders have different attitudes to risk. And what they'll be looking at is not just the amount of the amount of capital that you can bring to the deal, but also they'll be looking at your experience and your other properties and so on. So
because before it was kind of like 20%, but you know, 25% is now more, they're kind of like, they want to have more just in case if the market will be, even though it's growing, but just in case they want to make sure that there is a buffer.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens after tomorrow as well. This is why it's such, at the moment, such an interesting time, really, but it's volatile. And lenders have to respond pretty quickly. So like Tom has just said, today there's this brand new fleet mortgage product that's come out. I bet tomorrow there'll be some lenders that say, let's wait till the Monetary Policy Committee has met before we decide to announce any more products, because we need to align those with what's happening, not just with the interest rate, but also just with the general feeling of either nervousness or confidence in the market. Because obviously, you know, the confidence has a massive impact on whether people buy a house or sell a house or stay in their house. You know, this is what, you know, the UK is built on housing. An English man's home is his castle, as they say. And, you know, this has been... Property rights, property has been a big thing in the UK for many thousands of years. So we react very strongly to volatility and big changes, as we saw last year with the Kwasi Kwarteng budget in September. So going back to your point, Natalia, I think it's a case of, this is why I say cultivate a good relationship with your mortgage broker. You know, every couple of weeks, maybe just check in, send them an email, quick phone call, what's happening. If you're thinking about buying in the next 2 to 3 months, for example, you want to know what the opportunities are coming up, what new products are out there, so that you can be prepared. And also so that you can make sure that you've got the right amount of capital there if they say, oh, we're not doing 80% loan to values anymore, it's only 75%. Yeah. So you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So, guys, lots to think about, lots to mull over, but it has been recorded. So anything that, you know, if you've drifted off listening to my dulcet tones halfway through, don't worry. And I'm looking forward to speaking to all of you in the next few days and weeks with your different projects and things. Keep going, keep your eyes open, and keep investing. And I'll speak to you all very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.